Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell. Mark Mother's Bathroom Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for Season 4. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Cool.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here. Please do hit that subscribe button if you're not already. You're going to get new interviews just like this one sent your way every single week. Of course, you can grab us Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. We've had some great guests dropping by lately, including legends like Emmylou Harris, Lori Morgan, Ayanna Lee. You've seen her in the new Spike Lee joint, Highest to Lowest, opposite Denzel Washington. Director Paul Feig was just here. We got to discuss The Housemaid, starring Amanda Seyfried and Sydney Sweeney. The Runarounds, the show on Prime Video. Talk to the band members. Also, Darcy Carden, who stars in season 3 of Loot on Apple TV+. Juliana Hatfield was here. Lou Graham from Foreigner. Gobo Fraggle from Fraggle Rock. And John Tartaglia, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with documentarian Morgan Neville. He's the guy behind 20 Feet from Stardom, which turned background singers into actual stars of the show. Won't You Be My Neighbor, which reminded everyone that Fred Rogers was quietly radical. And Roadrunner, which dug into Anthony Bourdain's genius without sanding off those messier edges. He's back with his latest film called Breakdown 1975 on Netflix. It's a deep dive into a year when America seemed to collectively lose its footing and still made some of the greatest movies of all time. Morgan's going to explain why you can't tell the story of 1975 without the years around it, how post-Watergate anxiety, cultural whiplash, and political exhaustion bled directly into films like Chinatown and Dog Day Afternoon, Taxi Driver, Jaws, even Star Wars, and why that moment eerily mirrors where we find ourselves 50 years later. The conversation also touches on New Hollywood's last great gasp, the rise of Reagan-era thinking before Reagan ever even took office, how movies functioned as a national therapy session, and why the shared theatrical experience itself now feels endangered. All of that and more as we discuss Breakdown 1975 on Netflix. It's Kyle Meredith with Morgan Neville.
I think you win on background.
It should be no surprise by looking around at this that I am quite the fan of what you've done over the years. So
music, you're a big music head. So
I run a AAA public radio station here in Louisville as the regular part of the day job. And then, of course, this interview series on the other half of it. So
that's
25, 30 years in this business. Yeah. So music.
I have some friends from Louisville who were, what were they? I mean, they probably left all before your time, but they were part of the music scene way back in the probably late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. I know a lot of those folks, the Squirrel Bait, Peter Searcy, Love Jones, Slints, of course.
Those are the guys, the Squirrel Bait and Love Jones, you know, I know all those guys.
Yeah. Jonathan Palmer, Barry Thomas. Yeah.
Jonathan's a very good friend of mine.
I was just texting him. Love Jones released a new single yesterday.
Oh, I know they were, he told me they were, there's stuff coming. I didn't realize it happened.
It's happening. And so they're doing it again. So
wow, that's crazy.
Well, man, let's talk about Breakdown 1975.
Yeah.
On
it's
Netflix.
A deep dive into the movies.
Into the movies and the year. So the obvious question, right? Like what spurred this? Like, how did you arrive to kind of singling out that era?
I mean, honestly, it happened because of a conversation with Ted Sarandos, who said, you know, it's crazy how many great films came out in 75. And I think he like went on a, you know, Google rabbit hole of kind of thinking about it. And what I got was, hey, is there something to do kind of just memorializing that time? I don't know what it is. And so, you know, I thought about it and I, you know, I love those movies. I grew up on those movies. And so to me, I started to see, oh, there's this kind of snapshot of America at that time and the movies at that time. And that America was incredibly screwed up and the movies were never better. And like, what's the correlation between those two things?
It's an interesting way to look at it right there. Like, country. I mean, I guess you can do that for lots of different points, but that point specifically because you do such a really, you paint it really perfectly of how that's still speaking to today and where we are at the moment.
Well, the movies were in such dialogue with the times, you know, and again, you know, we go through it in the film, but you know, there are even films that aren't obviously about the times are about the times. So, you know, Polanski saying, you know, they were watching the Watergate hearings while they're writing Chinatown. Or, you know, Robert Altman was also obsessed with the Watergate hearings when he was working on Nashville, working on those. So all this stuff is in the zeitgeist. So, you know, it all gets filtered through the movies. And there's also this moment in the movies where, you know, people talk about New Hollywood. But this is really the end of New Hollywood. But it's also, I guess what you would say, kind of high New Hollywood, which is, you know, early New Hollywood is, you know, Easy Rider and, you know, the kind of these great kind of indie films that have a very kind of more of a rough spirit. But once you get to The Godfather 2 and Chinatown and Taxi Driver and all these films, it's like the new Hollywood filmmakers have grown up in a way, and they're making really peak mature films that are still riding that wave of what new Hollywood was just before the door closes.
There's maybe, I mean, I'm trying to think, maybe only one other time that kind of happening in that way. It's really interesting because maybe it was only last year there was a book that came out about why 1999 was the greatest year in movies, right?
I saw that book, you know, and...
But it was like the same thing. You were coming out of the indie boom of the early 90s. You had your own Watergates, you know, with Clinton at the time. Like, you know, how history repeats, I think, is what
I think to me, history repeating is the big theme of this film. So without it ever being explicit, I think when you realize what America went through in the 70s, it makes me feel like, oh, we've kind of been here before in some ways. Like we've been, you know, the country went through a nervous breakdown, I would say, in the 70s, you know, complete kind of loss of identity. And I feel like it made me understand more about where we're at today by understanding what we went through then. And to me, really, the 70s, this particularly the mid-70s, is the period where this kind of hinge moment where, unlike the kind of political transformation of the 60s or the financial transformation of America in the 80s, the 70s is psychological transformation. It's where we go through a personality change because it's how we see ourselves completely shifts, you know. So it's kind of harder to see, but I think it's actually deeper in terms of how we changed as Americans, you know, from being this, you know, kind of communitarian, you know, we're all in it together to, you know, everybody's in it for themselves.
We're not good as a country of remembering history.
No, we're terrible at it.
Ever. And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle and Meredith with Morgan Neville.
Because as a filmmaker, when you're honing in so close to a specific time, like it's easy for people to be lost in the weeds, whereas you get, you know, more the macro view of it all and start seeing, you know, the threads of how we got there. Like you've already said how the idea arrives, but like what really is that moment where you start to figure it out, like, oh, here's the movie. This is the movie or the documentary.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think the first thing I did was, other than watching a lot of movies, is I read a lot of books, you know, and again, this was like my childhood. So, you know, I have the feeling of what was going on in the 70s, the kind of growing up with no parents around, like the Bad News Bears captures that. Like that was my childhood. Like, you know, we were all pretty feral, I think, being raised then. And there was just a sense of kind of, you know, even as a kid, kind of doing it on your own. And like real, yeah, a lack of rules about things that I felt. But I would say really starting to understand that the shifts that we come to see in the 80s really are happening in the mid 70s. You know, I think in a way, 75 is where the 60s end and the 80s begin.
I understand that. I say that a lot of time about 1983, 1992. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't start on the zero. It's a little
doesn't start
bit
on
in.
The zero. It's this, you know, because really the idealism of the 60s and the kind of hope of political transformation falls apart in the early 70s. But, you know, as we say in the film, which I thought was striking, is that 1972 was the most egalitarian year in American history. There was less income inequality in 1972 than any year in the 20th century, which is basically the result of 40 years of New Deal. And like everything was relative, you know, working unions, wages, social net, and all of that just starts fraying in the mid 70s. And a lot of that has to do with capitalism and trade. It has to do with the Arab oil embargo. It has to do with also has to do with the kind of complacency on the left, the kind of bloatedness of the unions and a lot of kind of self-inflicted wounds on the left about that. And then really understanding the kind of the forces that started to get marshaled in the mid 70s, you know, from the Heritage Foundations and the Moral Majority, but certainly Ronald Reagan, realizing just what a big role he played throughout 75. He's everywhere. He's syndicated radio 3 times a week, a newspaper column on TV.
Which is easy to forget that part too, because we think yes. of Reagan in the 80s, right? That's.
But this is Reagan's real announcement on a national stage that I'm going to be a major figure in politics going forward.
There was there's a review. Maybe you've seen it. It's the only negative part I'll bring up. I don't agree with the review, but it made me realize. Well, realize it's not like big stretch to get here, but to like I'll just read it. It says that the headline: Breakdown 1975, mistakes opinion for history and blames the wrong people. And
I did not read it. I don't read reviews.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay, by the way. Yeah. You're fine missing it, I promise. But I'm only bringing it up, by the way, because I was thinking like, oh, right, when we look back, many times with the rose-colored glasses, right? And for as a politically charged moment as we're in, divided. That if you paint that with the basic facts that you've done, with, as the kids say, the receipts, here's the video clips, here's Reagan, it won't matter if they're on the other side of that fence right now. It's almost like automatically shuts down. They see that. Like, I don't know if you ever even think about that part. Like, you that might happen as a viewer when you're making a film like this, how we see history.
Well, of course, people, you know, that's part of the problem, is that when we start to look at history, read it backwards, we don't see it clearly. I mean, I know, you know, the film is very, you know, honest and fact-checked about everything it says. And the funny thing is, you know, my whole career, I've actually made films for people who I don't necessarily agree with. And part of that is I started my career in kind of left-wing journalism. And I felt frustration with preaching to the converted, or even worse, arguing with the converted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always been way more, one of the big themes of my work is, how does culture connect us across divide? So Won't You Be My Neighbor, Best of Enemies, Music of Strangers, film after film, I'm looking at how I can reach people who I don't necessarily agree with. And that's why I really wanted to engage with an understanding of why characters like Ronald Reagan and Phyllis Schlafly or Archie Bunker resonated so much at the time, because I feel like the kind of self-inflicted wounds at the left contributed to a lot of this, you know, and I feel like we're in the same moment right now politically, where I think of people on the left don't want to take a lot of responsibility for the predicament we're in. Sure, there's a lot of blame, no doubt, but I do also think there's a lot of responsibility. And so, you know, I think this film is right in my wheelhouse of trying to engage people in being uncomfortable in their own kind of pat histories of things.
Poking the bear.
Yeah.
In that way. Yeah. But it is. I mean, of the other reviews that I read, and I just kind of scattered through some of those, like every single one of them, I think, is to your point. It started a conversation, even with that person within their own article, with themselves, you know. You can find them arguing with themselves here and there. You know, that's...
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I've never made a film like this. And that was also kind of interesting for me. I would call it an essay film. You know, it's just a different type of film that other people, you know, from Adam Curtis to, you know, Agnes Varda or Chris Marker have done. And I just thought, well, let me try this kind of film and see what it's like. But to me, to be thought provoking, you know, is kind of the highest order, because if, you know, again, it's kind of the opposite of telling people what they want to hear or confirming their biases.
Sure. Because like, where are we getting from that?
We're getting nothing from that. Yeah,
and we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Morgan Neville. I will say, on the fun side of this, the way you cut these movies together to talk to each other, you know, just on the purely fun, it's so, like, that's entertainment on top of the history, you know. No question there, just a compliment of well done.
Thank you. No, I mean, that the, you know, the movies themselves are amazing, but then, you know, the idea of having the movies in conversation with each other as they're in conversation with America at the time just became this gear that worked so well when we started putting it together that, yeah, that we just completely leaned into it, you know, because there are other, you could do a whole film about music in 1975. You know, we touch on music, but not really. There's so many, I feel like so many scenes in the film could be documentaries unto themselves. Some have been documentaries. There was one called Drop Dead City this year about New York City's bankruptcy that came out, a whole documentary, which is very good. So it's kind of, it's the synthesizing of all these ideas and kind of reminding people that they are all happening at the same time, and they're all happening in a way that are echoing off of one another.
Well, if history does repeat, as we do see, as we are here, you only have to look around. What about on the filmmaking side? I mean, are we set up for that to ever happen like that again with the indie, the new crowd in that sort of way,
We're certainly not in the era we were in New Hollywood, where there was major art, tourist cinema everywhere. That said, I don't want to be a complete, denier of the fact that, this year has produced some incredible auteurist films, from Sinners to One Bottle After Another to Hamnet, or there have been some great movies. So it's not like great movies aren't getting made, but they are way more the exception than they are the norm. And I would say, the health of the film business is obviously not what it was. And somebody who's grown up loving movies and theatrical movies, I'm as concerned as anybody about the health of and diversity of what we get in theaters. I mean, I think that's the I feel like we as a culture are losing our feel for going to the movies, and obviously COVID has exacerbated this, the idea that we're just used to seeing things at home. Certainly, I've made a lot of documentaries that have done well theatrically, and there's something about that shared experience of seeing movies that we are just, that's endangered right now. And,
I saw a positive thing today. It said Gen Z, it's up 25% of them going to the movies. I don't remember the entire quote about that, but that's the general number of it.
I mean, I've got a 20-year-old son who's super into Letterboxd, and he's,
Yeah, my
he's
18-year-old
into it.
son. Yeah, they go. I don't know. I'm hopeful. I'm not always optimistic. Right on that cusp of Gen X and millennial enough that I have the cynicism of my Gen X crew, but I don't, I'm hopeful of this moment where studios are gobbling up each other, because it's happened in the music industry just the same. And in the music industry, what it allowed was these like post-punk movements to come back out up again, out of Ireland and England and everything, and we start to get a real indie scene again. Like, isn't that what can happen in movies too? It's like, if all the big guys are gobbling up each other, doesn't that leave room for the little guys to make their own thing again?
I mean, I think there's a huge vacuum in terms of the opportunity for audiences to find those kinds of films. So with the consolidation of our distribution channels, I think just as a consumer, I want there to be more places that are exciting to engage with independent voices. And like, I think, there's been so much change. And I think in the next couple of years, we're going to see more and more of that, just because I don't think everybody just wants to watch the same, 20 movies a year on every screen, if they're even going to a theater. I just think it's not serving me. And there are a lot of people like me that want to have choices and go to theaters and see movies. And, I think we also have to make sure that the theatrical experience is worth going to, that it still feels special, which it doesn't always these days.
Listen, I miss an arcade at the movies, but that's, I'm showing my age there too. It's
The arcade at the movies, and just, but also, yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I don't know how much down the rabbit hole, but like my local, ArcLight was a movie chain theater here in, I think just in California, that that was great. And the theater they had that went out of business during COVID has reopened as a Regal. And I have to say, it's night and day from the kind of energy and community that it used to have to what it is now. And I think that's a problem that theater chains can't just squeeze every penny by running more ads and doing less and less and expecting that to be a business model that sustains. I think the people who are investing in the theatrical experience, those theaters are exciting, and I think, I don't just want cinema to be the kind of vinyl of modern consumerism. I think it has the potential to be more, but I think the thing that cinema does is in the theater is bring people together to have a communal experience, which is kind of a modern day church. So
You're very much on point. I agree. I agree.
I want that experience.
I was researching this. I was reading about, I don't know if it was your very first documentary, but it was your very first one about the forgotten lost LA,
Yeah, Shotgun Freeway.
which
Yeah.
I haven't seen. Was just reading about it, but it automatically made me go, could he make a sequel to that? Like, what would that look like now? Because the things we're talking about, have you ever considered that?
I haven't. I did my first documentary because I was a kid from Southern California who went to school back east. And when I would talk about the idea of LA history, people would laugh at me. And they said LA history was an oxymoron. And to me, I think I've been proven right that I think now people understand that LA has a very fascinating history. But at the time, again, in the late 80s when I was in college, LA was still kind of the easy punchline for a lot of people talking about the cultural value of Southern California. But now I think with not just film and music, but the art scene and everything else, I think LA has always been a fascinating place to me because it's a place where people have largely made up their own rules, away from wherever they came from. And that kind of freedom has always been something I've loved about it here. So yeah, I'm going to think about that. It might be time for a sequel.
Being interesting. In the meantime, Breakdown 1975 is so good. I so enjoyed it, and the music with the Heartbreakers and Heart and War and everything. I know we didn't get into that, but seriously, Morgan, it's such a pleasure to get to meet and talk to you on here. So congrats on this one, and whatever comes next.
Thank you. Absolutely. Next is Paul McCartney in the 70s.
Oof, I'm in.
Yeah,
We'll do
next
this
year.
again.
Next year.
And my thanks to Morgan. Breakdown 1975 is out now on Netflix. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here to keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions. Anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Yola Tango, David Diggs, Elvin Bishop, Jimmy Eat World, The Posies, Jill Sobule, Pet Shop Boys, Scott Weiland, Sun 60, Jim Croce, Robert Plant, Sarah Bareilles, 21 Pilots, War, The Darkness, and my interviews with Cheap Trick, Chicago, and John Waters. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like, follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
Good luck, Bluebell.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.